welcome to the Hidden and Cavish Inside Pulse Wrestling Pulsecast. It is Thursday night again, December 12th, and it is our WWE TLC preview show. I am your host, as always, Justin Sawalki here, with only one co-host this week, Matt Herrick. Cam is stuck at work, unfortunately, so he will not be able to join us tonight. He might get his picks into his predictions into us before the show starts, but we'll see how, like I said, before the show starts out, at some point during the show. So we'll see how that goes here. But for now, it is just myself and Matt. It is barely above zero here in Buffalo with a wind chill. It's been snowing all day. I was at work today, and at one point you couldn't even see across the street because of how hard the snow was coming down. So I am just ready to sit here in front of my computer and talk some wrestling and talk some TLC. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I not nearly as bad as you are. I'm a little south of where you are, and we had our snow. I don't remember what day it was, but it was not near. It was more ice than snow, so. It was doable. I'm not looking forward to the weekend doing all the different predictions that I've got now. But, hey, I don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, I'm used to it by now. I've been living with this for my whole life. To me, snow is nothing. I get more upset with the people that complain about it constantly than the actual snow itself. So. It's like, you've been living here your whole life, and obviously, if you don't know, I'm from Buffalo. You've been living here your whole life for 23 years. I don't even see a Facebook status every single time it snows complaining about the weather or you're driving, blah, blah, blah. You know, just deal with it or go move down south. One of those two. It's not that hard of a decision there.
Try working a job where probably 85% of the staff has never seen snow.
Oh, God.
You walk in there, and they're just like, oh, my God, I can't drive in this. There's no way I'm going to make it to work. And it's like, there's barely anything on the ground. What is going on right now? Like, it's so cold. It's fine.
Yeah, my brother just moved on. My brother just moved down to Virginia a couple months ago, and they got snow down there, I think last week it was, and they got, like, 2 inches. And he was just like, oh, you guys, you know, shut down everything here for 2 inches of snow. He's like, 2 inches of snow that in Buffalo is like, you know, nothing to us. So, yeah, you can definitely have a big reaction, a big difference when people don't see snow as often and then they see snow for the first time and it's, oh, my God, I can't drive in it. So, yeah, there's definitely a big difference in people there. But I guess, okay, I think that's the end of our weather report for tonight. We are here, like I said, to talk TLC. This Sunday is the WWE TLC pay-per-view. It's the last pay-per-view of 2013 for them, and pretty much, you know, they got a couple of shows after that, obviously, before the new year starts, but it's pretty much the end of, like, if you want to call it this season of the WWE, which kind of runs, like, post-SummerSlam until now, if you kind of want to group it together. So you got this season coming to an end, and pretty much in another week or two, we're going to be going full force into WrestleMania season with the start of the kickoff for the Royal Rumble build from there. And then, obviously, you have the Rumble, followed by Elimination Chamber right after WrestleMania. So this is normally the best time, I guess you want to call it. I would probably say, sort of somebody who's an outsider, the best time to be a wrestling fan is when January comes and they know the WWE starts putting pretty much as much humanly effort as possible into their product to make it the best they could possibly have. You know, there's times they hit and miss here and there, but this is actually the point where the stars start coming back. You start seeing, like, more legends of C.J. Bobby, like Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker start showing up here and there. But, you know, that's next month. Now we're talking TLC. We haven't really talked about the actual WWE television programming for the last couple of weeks. We've kind of had We Are Off Thanksgiving, and then we had our Top 5 Biggest Surprises show last week. So we really didn't get a chance to talk about all that's happened in the last couple of weeks. We kind of briefly mentioned the title unification stuff at our Biggest Surprises show, because that was brought up as one of the topics. So I guess before we get into the pay-per-view here, I guess maybe, Matt, you want to give your thoughts on how stuff's kind of been playing out the last couple of weeks on TV and what do you think the current state of the WWE kind of is heading into the final pay-per-view of 2013?
Yeah, I think it's been a little bit tougher the last couple of years to get people excited for WrestleMania season. I think they've hurt a lot of their fans. I just know casual people that people are casual watchers who usually purchase Royal Rumble and then maybe Elimination Chamber and then definitely WrestleMania. And the last couple of years, they've been so disappointed with it, they're questioning purchasing. So, and that was with the star power that they had going into these shows. Now that there's no star power, I could say, I mean, it's not going to be a surprise that Brock Lesnar is going to be there. It's not going to be a surprise that Undertaker makes return or whoever he faces. There's not much that, the biggest thing right now they got going for them is Kobe. And how exciting would that be if Hulk Hogan shows up at WrestleMania? I don't know, I'm just sick of the shtick. This time to move on, buddy, and it's looking like that time was about 20 years ago. But getting back to the current landscape of the WWE right now and how they're planning out their shows, how they're getting ready for the new year, almost seems like they went panic mode. And we've said this before, and I don't think we ever really noticed what panic mode was until we heard the idea of a title unification. I mean, this is something that fans have been calling for a long time, and we discussed on the last show why I don't feel it would be that great of an idea for business-wise, for the full best business, but I understand why they're doing it and why they feel they need just one champion. And it's a smart idea in that respect, but in another respect, it's going to hurt your business when you first do it. It's just, that's how it's going to happen. The last time they unified the titles, the title was unified for, I want to say, 89 months. It was through one WrestleMania. You saw Chris Jericho win it at Vengeance. You saw one WrestleMania where he faced Triple H. Triple H won the unified title. They made a unified championship belt. And then you saw a couple trades. Hulk Hogan won it. Taker won it. Rock won it. And then as soon as Rock won it, Brock Lesnar should become in the SummerSlam. That following SummerSlam, they never made a full calendar year. And once he won the WWE Championship, all of a sudden Stephanie McMahon, who's the general manager of SmackDown, has said that he is exclusive SmackDown, and Eric Bischoff had to make the championship belt for Raw. So that idea of having a unified champion lasted less than a year. And now it's this big, big, big storyline. It's obviously been playing out for a while. I think the only reason why they decided to strongly go with it is because they were able to get John Cena back at it early enough time to get some hype into the pay-per-view. They knew they were going to get hype on Royal Rumble. They knew they were going to get hype on the Elimination Chamber. But their numbers have been down, and ratings are down, and pretty much everything's down. So why not throw their audience a bone here and see what happens? It's just whether or not it sticks is the question. But I don't know. What's your take on? The last segment on Raw, I will admit, was fantastic. It's better than I ever thought. I thought it was great how they did it. I thought it added an awesome visual at the end where Randy Orton's down. John Cena standing with the authority. I thought that was a great visual. And I mentioned in my report, which I've been getting a lot of feedback and a lot of questions about, was a lot of people missed the fact that CM Punk and Triple H brawled for a little bit, where Punk knocked Triple H out of the ring and then turned around and super kicked from Shawn Michaels, who then ran into a running knee from Daniel Bryan. So in my mind, that's looking like DX versus Punk and Bray. And if they're able to convince Sean, and if anybody's going to be able to convince Sean with Hunter and maybe Daniel, simply because he trained him, if they can pull that match together for WrestleMania, that could be their top draw. I mean, obviously the top draw is going to be whatever heavyweight championship match is, but that could be a very, very solid. That could be the Undertaker CM Punk match. But yeah, that's my take generally of going into this show. But what do you think of Raw and how they're rushing about kind of building up this huge historic match that's never been done, even though it's done.
Before I get into my thoughts, if you want to see something cool real quick, if you go to the TLC, the WTLC page on WWE.com, my tweets that I sent out a couple minutes ago promoting the podcast is actually on the list of WWE TLC tweets on the right side. It was the first one. Somebody else just posted something. Somebody else just got on there. But, yeah, so my tweet promoting the show just got on WWE.com. So if you want to go check that out, go ahead. I took a picture of it. I'll post it later on HGC Wrestling. But, yeah, I just think it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Listen to the show while going to check it out.
Questions. Yeah. What's your prediction?
So, that's a little cool. As far as I completely agree, I know we talked about this before, too. I definitely think that unifying the titles at a show like this is a sign of kind of a panic by them. They saw the ratings. They knew fans weren't that happy with what was going on going into Survivor Series where, you know, you had Big Show and Randy Orton fighting. And there's still a handful of fans that aren't just happy seeing John Cena or Randy Orton again, for another match between those two with both of them holding titles. I always thought that if they were going to do a unification, I thought it was going to happen at WrestleMania, where it makes sense where you're on your biggest, grandest stage and you're kind of going into, the final push for it, and you get the two titles unified on the biggest pay-per-view of the year, and you come out with one champion. I always thought that if they were going to do that, that would be the smart way to do it. But it seems like they're trying to get more people to buy this TLC show to try to get people to say, hey, look, we can give big matches away on pay-per-views too, even though it might not be the most sensible thing to do. So, there's that. As far as the rest of the crowd will get into it, I mean, it's not that appealing if you ask me. Obviously, the handicap matches might have a bit of intrigue here and there. But I agree with what you said about the end of Raw. If you read my report on Raw on HGC Wrestling, I kind of said that, I know I'm supposed to be excited for the pay-per-view on Sunday, and I thought that final segment actually did a good job promoting the pay-per-view, but it also got me excited for what could happen going forward. Like you said, you have the possibility of, DX versus CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. There's obviously the possibility of single matches between those two, or maybe you have Punk and Triple H and Bryan and Shawn Michaels. And to me, as a wrestling fan, that's much more appealing than the possibility of a Hulk Hogan return or a Goldberg return, especially, like you said, if you can convince Shawn Michaels to come out of retirement for some kind of match like that. Obviously, it has a lot of spectrum to it, and I think it's probably something that might increase pay-per-view eyes more than maybe a Hulk Hogan appearance. So, yeah, I definitely agree that they're in panic mode. We'll see what happens. I thought, like I said, I thought they did a relatively good job on Raw this past Monday trying to promote the biggest, grandest, most important match in WWE history, even though title unifications happened before, but on whatever with that. Let's get right into the card here. Kickoff show is Dolph Ziggler versus Fandango, basically two guys who have had their highs in 2013 and have now just basically come crashing back down to earth. Dolph Ziggler, obviously, we talked about him last week on the show, was pretty much one of Monty Khan's biggest surprises, just seeing his recent downfall as far as where he started off the year and where, he could have gone becoming world champion if he didn't get hurt. And then Fandango was a guy who it looked like at one point was going to get the Intercontinental title put on him at, I believe it was Payback, and he actually got a concussion there too. And then he was replaced with Curtis Axel, and then he was pretty much, never fought up again after that. He's just kind of been there in the mid-card. It's the pre-show match. Normally the WWE likes to kind of put the face over there, and I think if it was almost anybody else fighting Dolph Ziggler, I'd probably be inclined to pick the other guy, but I am going to go with Dolph Ziggler here. Really no solution, no backing to it other than the fact that he's the face in this match, and it's not like Fandango is a heel who is on the rise with a possible push coming. So I'm going with Dolph Ziggler here. Matt?
Yeah, you're going with Dolph Ziggler, and I think it's just a lofty, I don't want to use the term fanboy, but I think you are having high hopes for a man who is really not in the graces of very many people lately. I don't know why. I've read reasons why. I've heard reasons why. I don't like to really speculate on it unless it is from a reliable source. And from reliable sources, all I've heard is that he's done everything that's been asked of him. And that he's very Jericho-esque when Jericho first debuted in WWE. So he might have to get over that hurdle a little bit. And the fact that he's already been a two-time world champion, kind of two-time world champion, but the fact that he already has those, he's got numerous IC and U.S. championship runs, like maybe one tag team champion run, that might have been part of Spirit Squad, who knows. But yeah, I think Dolph Ziggler is a risky choice for this match. The reason why this match is on a pre-show is because these guys work. Both of these guys know how to get a crowd fired up, crowd ready to go. And I've seen a lot lately, and I said it before our I don't know if it was our last show or the show before, that I was expecting Fandango to get the IC championship. I thought they were going to transfer the IC title to R-Truth. That's what I thought it was going to get transferred over to R-Truth, and the R-Truth was going to drop it to Fandango. He's been on a winning streak. He hasn't lost. He's constantly being featured. Luckily, we're not getting multiple segments of them because I feel that would be an oversaturation of the character. But inside the ring, every match has been a quality match. I don't see how anybody can deny this guy's talent anymore when, at first, everybody was just bashing him for not being able to do anything and just throw a proper leg drop. I think he's shown a lot since then, and I think he showed a lot that he went through that quote-unquote feud with Great Khali and was able to come out of it not hurt and not looking weaker than he already was, and actually came out looking better. So I'm interested to see where they go with this, because these two guys could be the next Randy Orton's and John Cena's as far as building up stars, but it all depends on politics and what they can do in the ring and how the crowd responds to them. So, as I said, both these guys are very good in the ring, and hopefully that they can get the, I don't know where they're going to be for TLC, Miami. Hopefully they can get that crowd into it before the show starts. And that kickoff show, even though it's a relatively new idea and the panel hosts sometimes are a little weird, the kickoff match really does set the tone for the rest of the night. And I'm starting to really like the guys that they're putting on that show. Whether it has their expectations for the pay-per-view or not, it's really setting the tone for the rest of the night. And it's a nice little added bonus thrown back to free-for-all of the olden mid-90s days.
Yeah, just throw Todd Pettengill back on the show. It'll just feel like it was the 90s again. It'd be perfect. I definitely used to like those old free-for-all shows back in the day. Yeah, you know, like I agree, like you said. I really think the panels that they've been doing recently, too, are a nice little added touch throughout the night. I mean, you bring back, I think this one is, I want to say Mick Foley's on it again. He was on it last time, I think, too. You know, Mick Foley and Booker T, you know, just bring it back to Legends, and it kind of gives it a different feel. Like, I liked when they started doing it at WrestleMania, and I'm glad that they actually kept doing it there. So I definitely, like you said, the added focus they've been trying to get more on these pre-shows lately and trying to put matches out there, like, get the crowd into it. I mean, I didn't watch the Miz Kofi one last time before the show started, but you know, you can go all the way back to the tag title match from the Shield and the Usos from TLC. If you have the right pre-show match going on the show beforehand, it definitely can get the crowd livened up for the pay-per-view. Next match I have listed down here is the Divas Championship match between AJ and Natalya. You know, every month we come into the show thinking, you know, are they going to take the title off AJ? Are they not going to? I've always thought if they were going to do it, it was going to be Natalya rather than one of the Bella Twins, just for the simple fact that Natalya is a better worker than one of the Bella Twins, despite them being obviously with the connection to Daniel Bryan, whatever. But
just to cut you off for a second and show you up a little bit, my tweet was just posted on www.com.com.au, but I gave the number up to people on there.
Yep, you put the number on there. That's smart. Yeah.
So that way we got it up there. If people want to call in, give their predictions, talk to us, let us know. Justin's up. I'm not. So.
All right.
It is on the WWE website.
All right, look at us. We are moving up in this world, folks. Now, let's see. Like I said, it's one of those situations where I could see them taking the title off AJ and putting it on Natalya, but I could also see a situation where maybe AJ hangs on to it until WrestleMania-like type of thing, and then maybe somebody like a Mickie James comes back and you have Mickie James and AJ at WrestleMania, or you bring up somebody like Paige, and Paige fights AJ at WrestleMania. There's a bunch of different things that can go on there as far as the Divas title goes. So, like I said, it's a topic to me. As far as I know, I think they're done filming Total Divas for now, so it's not like, I don't know if it's one of those things where, you know, Natalya can win and it could be a great ending to the season of Total Divas. So who knows? I don't think that'll happen, though. I am going to stick with AJ retaining here only because I feel like they could have put the title on Natalya before. And I believe they fought. I think it was at Night of Champions they fought before, and they didn't. So I don't know why they would probably do it again. I could see why they would do it here, but if it was me, I wouldn't do it again here. So I am going to have AJ once again retaining the title here and, you know, going, I think if she retains it here, she's going to go into WrestleMania season with the title. So I'm going with AJ as my pick here. Matt?
I think you're missing remembering history a little bit. It was, they substituted out Brie Bella for Natalya. They did a Fatal 4-Way that they just showed on Little Divas, and they did a one-on-one match between AJ and Brie, which both looked like they were supposed to be Natty's spot, and that's where she was going to get that push. But both times, it would be AJ backfired, and they went in a different direction. They even had a stare-down on SmackDown before, like 2 weeks before the pay-per-view, and then we found out the next night on Raw that it was going to be that Bella challenge. It was weird. I'm glad they're finally going with Natalya. I will say this. Total Divas has been picked up for a second season. They are getting ready to film their season finale very, very soon, which means they can't end on Natty and his wedding. They need something big to end on. It's not going to be Daniel Bryan and Brie's wedding. They're doing their engagement this week. But I just have a gut feeling that Natalya was the one at the beginning who, when they set up the whole Total Divas angle, especially with the first episode where they kept playing the poor Natty angle and playing the this girl deserves it and she's not getting the recognition she deserves. She should always be the champion, the one that trained all these girls. I feel like once they found out they were going to get picked up for another season, they were like, okay, let's go with the hot hand and go with Brie Bella and see what happens. and that didn't work. So now they have another, like, 6 or 7 episodes until after final. So yeah, I think that very well may be the final match, or the final segment on their television show. And the fact that they showed this past week was Natalya DJ's cat dying, and they're showing the grief with suffering from that, and they were showing how the other divas aren't progressing as well as they should be progressing, and how everybody hates Diva Marie, all the normal stuff. But they were really building up the sympathy and the support for Natalya. So I think they're going back to plan one or plan A and getting the belt on the most veteran of the divas. And I have no problem with that. Like I said before, when I thought she was going to win, I have no problem with her winning the belt and then dropping it a month later to AJ. I think AJ right now is the most talented and the best diva in the WWE right now. But she needs a baby face to work off of, and they haven't found one yet. If it happens to be Natalya or Brie Bella or somebody else, whoever it happens to be, that's great. She needs a baby face to work off of, and I think she needs to lose the title before we see any more of that crazy AJ instability going on. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Natty with this one. Every time that she's in the title match, I just feel like it's going to be her time. But, yeah, I think that might be their finale where they want to go with it. So, yeah, I got Natty.
Yeah, but Natty drunk dialed Stephanie, and they showed in the preview clip. She drunk dialed Stephanie this week, and she might get fired. Who knows what could happen there, you know?
Yeah, she might get fired, even though she's on TV right now. I absolutely adore the segment where these women get one-on-one meeting with Stephanie McMahon while, like, Raw or SmackDown going on. I'm sorry to break not happening. When Stephanie's there, Triple H's there, Vince is there, they're running the show. They're not going to pull aside one certain person and talk about, hey, you drunk dialed me and said all these weird things last night. It's not going to happen. You're going to be sick, called into their office, probably at about 9 a.m. in the morning when they get to the arena, not when the show is going on, because you can tell the show is going on, Natty's in her ear, and Stephanie's all made up, ready to go. That just doesn't happen, people. There's no time backstage for anything like that to happen. So I love the idea that this is another part of almost gaining sympathy for Natalya, because her job is being threatened, and it's adding a little more heelish to Stephanie, who God knows she doesn't need any work. But it's a good little thing, but it's something that always makes me roll my eyes when I'm watching the show, because you know that would never, ever, ever happen, but yet it becomes a major pop. The fact that she had a one-on-one meeting with Eva Marie, like, are you kidding me? Like, no. You are not. You're technically not even a failure. You should be in NXT. If you're going to have a one-on-one meeting with anybody in any power of any control on the WWE side that's at the arena at that time, it would probably be either Mark or Jan, who have now moved on to the position, or it would be one of the agents. It would never be a McMahon or Triple H. It just would not happen. And it's frustrating and it's hysterical at the same time. But it's another reason why I think Natty's going to win. I just think they're really building her up, trying to build up the sympathy for her and her struggles and wanting to be the champion.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see where everything plays out there. Like, yeah, I saw that clip when I was watching it. Once I watched it, probably Raw, but I saw that clip the other day. I just couldn't help but laugh and see that. And then they're like, oh, yeah, but she's going to be on the pay-per-view this Sunday fighting for the title. So we'll see how everything plays out. Maybe it's just, yeah, you know, just all that fun stuff. Next match, Intercontinental Championship match, Biggie Langston versus Damian Sandow. If they're like I've always said, there's a lock of the night. I am probably going to go here with this one. I don't think Biggie Langston's losing the Intercontinental title that quickly. I think he is a guy that the WWE wants to get behind for a push of some sort. You know, and I think holding the Intercontinental title, especially once the titles are supposedly going to be unified this Sunday at pay-per-view, he automatically becomes the holder of the second most important title in the company. And as we talked about on the show last week, the Intercontinental title is going to have to start getting pushed more when the titles are unified, because that's going to be the only other male singles title left in the company. So we're hoping that at some point in the next few months, heading into WrestleMania season, that we actually get an important feud for the IC title. And I think Biggie Langston is going to be the guy holding it. Like I said, I think he's a guy that I've seen what he can do in NXT. I've seen what he's done so far here in the WWE. I can see why the WWE wants to get behind him. Who knows where his 2014 will lie, but I think for the time being, I don't see him losing the Intercontinental title to Damian Sandow. You know, Sandow's a guy who's still, I don't know if he's going to have, I think his time for the main event came and gone with him losing the Money in the Bank cash-in, and then obviously with the titles being unified at TLC, I think he falls a little bit farther down the ladder. I think Big E's a guy who still needs a little bit of work in the ring. Obviously, that can come more with experience, but I don't see him losing the Intercontinental title here at this point to Damian Sandow, simply for the fact that they always say, especially with mid-card titles like the IC title, it shouldn't be lost to somebody until it is the guy who has it shouldn't lose it until it's somebody who could use the boost from getting the IC title. I don't think having the Intercontinental title on Damian Sandow's waist gives him any kind of, you know, boost up the card whatsoever. So I am picking Big E here to retain the Intercontinental title. And as far as I think he can hold it for a pretty long time until the foreseeable future, until they get behind somebody else who's ready to take the title for him. So I'm going with Big E here. Matt?
Yeah, I don't see any reason to do a title change here. Big E Langston amazes me every time he's in the ring. He's one of those guys who, he's absolutely built like a truck, but can move like a cruiserweight. It's unbelievable the stuff that he can do. It's unbelievable the charisma he has that he hasn't been able to show yet. And it's amazing that it's taken almost this long for him to get to this level. He's the perfect babyface in Chicago champion. And I say that because he's a much better babyface in Chicago champion than he would ever be a heel IC champion. And also, it's the guy that can do all those cool, spectacular moves in the ring, get the crowd behind him, get pumped up, pulls the strap down, a la Jerry the King Lawler, and people respond to that. I mean, they're going to respond to his humor when he's allowed to break out the humor. They're going to respond to the fact that this is a beast that's fighting on their side. They responded to his Goldberg, they responded to his Batista. Why not Biggie Langston? I think he's going to work. Doesn't have the limitations that Mark Henry had and Ahmed Johnson had and guys like that who, and I'm not just trying to talk about race here. I'm talking in general these big, strong men that they brought in that really didn't know where to go and what to do and what was the best way to do it. Biggie is a different breed, and we saw a lot of that in NXT, and I'm looking forward to it at with the IC champion. And honestly, I think he might be the one that he eventually loses to Fandango. If they're still high on Bandango, they still want to give him an IC championship, then I can see a long-term future. They've had pretty good chemistry in the ring. I've seen a couple matches. They have pretty good chemistry in the ring, and why not? But it's not going to hurt the knee in any way, and it's only going to elevate Fandango and validate the fact that he's pretty good in the ring. So why not do it? But as far as the pay-per-view, Damian Sandow is he's lucky to be featured on television now. Hard to say. He worked much better in tag teams, even though they were thrown together tag teams. I think he should find a partner or a permanent protege and maybe go down that route, because right now his gimmick and his shtick is kind of rough, and it's been going on for about 2 years. I love the fact of what they've done with it, where he doesn't come out Grove anymore, he doesn't come out preaching anymore, he comes out as a more vicious type of wrestler. But they need to be more than that. They need to rebuild him up as a threat to something. And the IC title is not something that he can be a threat to, especially with a guy on a roll like Big E.
Yeah, definitely. It's amazing how different times we saw Ahmed Johnson. And if Ahmed Johnson was around today, he would be getting killed by the audience, I think, as far as his in-ring work goes. But when you look back in 1995, 1996, he was the second most over guy in the company, almost, to Shawn Michaels. And obviously, I think Bret Hart, too. But, you know, after that, you know, Ahmed Johnson was the most over guy. And then more people would overanalyze him today and say the guy couldn't work at all. I mean, I'm sure people talked about it back then, too, but it wasn't as heavily criticized, or the audience didn't pay attention to it as much as they would have now compared to, like I said, 95, 96. So this is one of those things where, you know, the change of time makes you think about it like that and say, whoa, I can't believe that happened. Let's see here. Next match I have written down, the next two matches are both handicap matches. The first one we're going to talk about is Daniel Bryan against the Wyatt family. I've started off the last couple, actually all of them so far. So, Matt, why don't you go first here? Tell us your pick here and what your thoughts are going into the match for this one.
Sure. I think it's stupid. I don't think they should get it. I think we should have saw if they wanted to do a handicap match, do a Shield and Wyatt versus Punk Bryan. I think that would have drawn much more intrigue than these two random, completely random feuds. This one bothers me more than the other handicap match. I loved Wyatt's promos leading into it, but I mean, the first time they beat him down and dragged him out of the arena, there was no update on him on SmackDown. And then he just showed back up on Raw and had a match. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, why isn't anybody figuring out that they kidnapped the guy and nowhere to be found? When they did it to Kane, it was like, okay, it's Kane. We expect that to happen. Daniel Bryan, a guy that's featured on like three different shows, and he just got grabbed by the three maniacs, and God knows what happened to him or what was going on, and nobody seems to be bothered by it. Like, for all I know, I touched somebody, they could have just dragged him out and drove him to the parking lot, parked at the end of the street, and then, now you have to walk back to the arena and take your... Like, that's literally the extent of what could have happened to him, because we have no idea, and there was no elaboration on it whatsoever. So
my favorite thing, my favorite thing from the show is after that happened, if I remember correctly, about, I think it was like maybe 20, 25 minutes later, they show his fiance from Total Divas, Brie Bella, sitting there asking for an autograph from Michael Strahan instead of wondering where the hell her husband was, because she was just kidnapped by these three psychopaths, and now they have no idea. Nope, I want an autograph from Michael Strahan. You know, that's another one of those things that you just said. Like, nobody cares? You know, my wife wants an autograph from a football player? Yeah, whatever. That's fine.
Yeah, and you could tell that was pre-taped, because right at, like, I think it was right before that, right after it, I was an app, like, a WWF the Chase show for freaking out about the fact that they don't know where he went. So it was, it was like written on the fly of, oh no, we're going to have them kidnapped, and then we have to do the issue of, okay, we have to, everybody knows that they're together, so we have to show Bruce freaking out. And then somebody was like, whoa, roll the Michael Strahan. But, like, oh God. Like, well, somebody talk to somebody else in communication wise there, because their show formats changed so unbelievably much that it's just ridiculous. And I don't know. This whole premise of, I like the whole premise of join us and you'll be better. Join us and we can make you a monster type thing. It doesn't work with Daniel Bryan, though, especially when he had to come out later for the final segment and the place was absolutely nuts for him. What's his incentive of joining the Wyatt family so he stops getting beat up? I have a feeling that he's going to be able to overcome that. So there's no real ramifications for this match, and it's driving me nuts because it's basically just a match to feature the Wyatt and feature Bryan when you could have done it in a totally different way, and the way they're doing it now is just, it seems dumb and illogical.
So who's your pick for this match? I'm sorry, I don't know if I caught that or not.
The match. I'm gonna go with Bryan. I'm trying to think further on in the card, and I'm gonna say Bryan here. You can outsmart the, well, that won't be like, but he'll pull it off.
Okay. I kind of think with the handicap matches going forward, like you said, they were in a panic mode with the title unification, and then I think the handicap matches are just laziness. You know, maybe having one is okay, but when you have two like that, even if it's just, you know, the authority trying to be the authority and punish guys like Bryan and Punk, there's different ways you could have gone about doing it. Like you said, you could have done Punk and Bryan against the Shield. You could have done Punk and Bryan against the Wyatt family. You know, combine them like that instead of doing two separate matches, which is just, like I said, I think lazy. As far as this one goes, I am kind of in the air about it. Like I said, I think if they want to get behind Daniel Bryan again, and obviously, as evidenced as last week's Raw, or this past Monday's Raw, and Raw a couple weeks ago, the fans are dying to get behind Daniel Bryan, and yet, the, you know, because SummerSlam did bad numbers and the TV ratings were down when he was champion, the WWE just is reluctant for that as far as that goes. And as much as we want to see it, we still don't know if we're gonna at any point whatsoever. And then you have somebody like the Wyatt family, where there's a group that I think the WWE still has high hopes for. I think it's, if I remember reading correctly, it's a Triple H kind of project. He's the one that's kind of behind them. So, you know, it's a Triple H creation. He wants them to get over at some point, maybe taking over for the Shield, which looks like at some point they could be breaking up at any time in the near future. So that's why I think I'm leaning toward the Wyatt family here, because I think it's for the simple fact of, I think they want to get behind the Wyatts, and I think they still think no matter what happens, Daniel Bryan is still going to be over with the audience no matter where he's going at some point coming WrestleMania time. So I'm picking the Wyatts to win this match. I could see something like along the lines of Daniel Bryan is one of them in the yes lock, and then it gets broken up, and I think it'll be one of those things where they'll show Bryan fighting a good fight, but in the end he just wasn't able to overcome the Wyatt family. So that's my pick here. I'm picking the Wyatts in this one. And then we have the other handicap match on the card, which is CM Punk versus The Shield. This one's a little bit more interesting to me. I think it's going to go one of two ways. I think it's going to go either CM Punk wins the match because of Shield miscommunication, or Roman Reigns, wins the match by himself, and that furthers tension between members of The Shield. And I'm going to go with my first one here. I think this will be one of those situations where they tease it again this past Monday on Raw, where you just go to when The Shield was announcing the Slammy Awards they had there, and Dean Ambrose just kind of cut Roman Reigns off, you know, and he got that little subtle look from Reigns to Ambrose. And then during the Ambrose Matches Test Monday on Raw, where he yelled at Rollins and Reigns, and they left ringside, and then Punk beat Ambrose in the match. So I think they're going to try to go with that here. You know, we've talked about the Shield breakup enough here before. I think Roman Reigns is the guy that they're going to get behind here going forward. I ran this wild idea through my head earlier today when I was sitting there bored at work because nobody was coming in because of the snow, that if they really wanted to get behind Roman Reigns, he could always and go give him a full-on Batista-like push. He could go on and they want to put John Cena in a non-title match at WrestleMania. You could see something where Roman Reigns wins the Rumble, and then so the Authority thinks they'll have this guy that'll just lay down to the face of the company, Randy Orton, and then they kind of do a Batista-like thing where he turns on Orton and Triple H and does something similar to Batista putting, you know, Orton or Triple H through a table and going full-on face mode. If they really want to start making new stars, I think that's almost as good as a possible way to do it. So, but, you know, they could also just stretch the Shield breakup all the way out to WrestleMania and not do that. And plus, I don't think the WWE is going to take that big of a risk putting Roman Reigns in a WWE title match at WrestleMania right off the bat like that. So I don't think something that big will happen. I still think Roman Reigns is going to become a star out of this. But I'm going to go with the finish here where you see, you know, CM Punk maybe have somebody up in the GPS and he sees Reigns coming and he moves and then Reigns ends up spearing, you know, Ambrose probably, and then he Reigns can stump from the ring, Punk pins Ambrose, and then they once again see more tension and break up between the Shield at the end there. So I'm going with CM Punk to win this match. Matt?
Wait, I just got confused there. You said that you have Reigns fearing Punk, but then not getting the pin?
I'm sorry, I meant Reigns spearing Ambrose. And then, like, Punk stumping Reigns to the outside, and then pinning Ambrose for one. If I missed that, that's what I meant.
Gotcha. Okay. I misspoke a little bit before. I meant to say for the Wyatt family, I thought the Wyatts were going to come out on top. I thought they were going to be, as far as thinking ahead, I think the Wyatts are going to be the ones to win. But before the whole kidnapping thing, as they try to kidnap any person they feud with, I think he's going to do the whole rally back and lay one of them out with the media or whatever it is. He'll be able to get the game going and get back to back. But, yeah, so I have the Wyatt family going there. But as far as the Shield and CM Punk match, the teases and the subtle looks and the subtle emotions and body language are so reminiscent. I've been saying it for months. They are so reminiscent of that complete split. The interesting part of this is Seth Rollins, because we both believe that they're going to essentially go with Roman Reigns versus Dean Ambrose once he was in. Dean Ambrose hasn't had a U.S. championship since he won the belt. He hasn't fought anybody really for an extended period of time. I expect that to change once he gets abandoned and maybe with Reigns, and that's how they start getting more of a babyface. I fully believe that Seth Rollins is going to kind of be pushed off to the side for a little while. Maybe they do an injury angle with him or do something with him. I think he's going to get pushed off to the side for a little bit because they want to focus in on Roman Reigns. Reigns is their next Seth Rollins is their next Jeff Hardy. And luckily, he doesn't have the team that Jeff had or has or whatever he's battling. So that's always a good thing. If you ever saw Seth Rollins in ROH or in NXT, go look it up and you'll see what I'm talking about. But I do feel like he's going to be the weaker one that's pushed aside simply because of how over that fear has gotten and how over the intensity of Reigns has come to tell the respect with the live crowd. I see this being a a walkout. I think CM Punk is, I believe CM Punk is winning this match almost the same way he won on Raw. I have a feeling it's going to be at a point where Ambrose is in the ring and refusing to tag because he feels he doesn't need to, or the other guys wouldn't tag him in for the whole match and finally tag himself in and then won't tag out. And they walk out on him, and thus ends the Shield, or is the very, very, very maybe chapter 12 of 13 of the Shield breakup. I don't see them lasting through the Rumble. I don't see them lasting since WrestleMania. I really see Ambrose playing the cocky heel that he's always been playing and going into a U.S. title program with Roman Reigns. They might go into the title program with Seth Rollins, but it's every indication is showing that Roman is the guy they want to go with, and I would not be surprised if we see that happen on Sunday with Reigns and Rollins just simply walking out on Ambrose and CM Punk taking advantage of the situation. So, I have Punk.
There's one match I forgot about. Mini SmackDown spoiler for anybody listening out there that doesn't read spoilers and wants to watch SmackDown. So it's a tag title match that was announced on SmackDown. It is the Rhodes Brothers, Cody Rhodes and Goldust, defending against Real Americans, Curtis Axel and Ryback, or Rybaxel, whatever you want to call him that, and the random team of Big Show and Rey Mysterio, despite all of their past history,
please
they're not buddy buddy again.
Call
I will not for any further.
I told my wife that when she was watching Raw, because she was writing an article, and she's asking me for all the different tags. I'm like, oh, there's Ryback, Curtis Axel, or Ryback. She's just kind of what? Like, is that a word? I'm like, no, but that's what they said their name was. She's like, that's terrible. So, yeah.
It's like one of them was a fan,
It's
like somebody who's a fan of Guns N' Roses.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, as far as this match goes, I don't think Curtis Axel or Ryback or Rey Mysterio or Big Show winning the tag titles. I could maybe see the Real Americans winning here. I think they've started to get over a little bit more recently, but of course it's also the thought in the back of your head that maybe they'll end up finally breaking Cesaro away and turning him face at some point. So who knows? If they're going to do Cody Rhodes Goldust at WrestleMania, I guess they got to lose the titles at some point, but this is probably maybe a little too early for that. So I think Cody Rhodes and Goldust are going to retain here. Like I said, I think the only real possibility would be seeing the Real Americans win the match, but I don't think they're going to do that at this point. I think they're going to eventually break those guys up and have to try to push Cesaro as top face. So I am going with the Rhodes brothers here to retain again. They probably don't see them losing until either the Rumble or maybe Elimination Chamber when they start their singles program, which we all expect to happen at some point between Cody and Goldust. So I'm going with them here, though, to retain at this pay-per-view. Matt?
Yeah, talk about a clusterfuck of the match. Okay, now I'm trying to remember everybody that's in there. It's Big Show Ray. Cody Goldust. It's Real American. And who?
Curtis Axel and Ryback.
Yeah, none of those are good choices. I could call for a Cesaro turn here, but I think he would get lost in the shuffle of the 2, 4, 6, 8 men plus managers. Who knows how many people are ready to be around there. I might call for that because there's been a little dissension between the two of them. But, and trust me, I was there with the whole puking angle. which was happening right in front of me, and just a little tidbit. I know I went back and, sorry, I'm taking it back. I watched SmackDown through the the turkey picture up over every time he puked. And, yeah, it was kind of funny that every time he puked, because it was, when he got ran out of the ring, he ran over to the ring announcer and started downing a random stuff that were in red cups. Don't know what it was. Don't really want to know what it was, but he was chugging, and there was about four or five different concoctions that he chugged. And I was second row behind the announcers, just looking over, and I'm like, this is not going to end well. Because they played up the whole thing, the whole match, and I'm looking at this. And I got to say, the funniest part was, I don't even know if it made it onto the show, but after he had thrown up on Jim Coulter, when they were walking back, well, first of all, the real narratives in the ring throughout almost the entire segment were cracking up. Like, you never saw them on camera because they were laughing hysterically. I've never seen Zeb laugh that hard. Antonio Cesaro lost it, and Jack Swagger had to keep putting his hand in front of his face. They were laughing so hard. But I thought the funniest part was it was right near the end. JBL was trying to get his hat back, or trying to get Michael Cole away from him. And Michael Cole went to hug JBL while he was covered in everything. And JBL started throwing the chairs that they sit on at him. He threw them to the ground and started picking up the office chairs and dumping them on top of him so he couldn't get back up and get at him. And JBL was, and he was swearing at him, and he was yelling at him, and he was going nuts. And then he just started laughing, and he broke, and his booty broke. And he was like, and he just was trying to hold it, and then he calmed it down and then started going off on him again. It was priceless. Like, that was one of the times where I wish I was taking video and just watching it. That was a priceless movie. But yeah, the real Americans, they're going to be splitting up pretty soon. There seems to be an abundance of baby faces around, but I don't know. It's weird. I like the fact that there's a lot of tag teams going right now. And what I would like to see is somebody come in to replace Cesaro as a member of the Real Americans. Like, I want to see that team continue just without him there. One, logically, it doesn't make any sense why the hell he's in the group. Other reasons why you want to see like a single star and everything else. But I think giving, like, having somebody replace him will also put him automatically into a feud. It's a feud against three other guys, so you'll see more of him and more of endurance or more of what he's capable of because he hates these three other men. And I think they would only help him. It all depends on who they want to bring in. There's not a lot of options in NXT unless they want to bring up someone like Bo Dallas, who would be a great deal for them, but he doesn't really have a heelish look to him. So I don't know how they would work that in immediately. They could bring up who's the guy that I was calling Arn Anderson. You've been watching that NXT. Guy that was with Sylvester LaForce for his Sylvester.
Scott Dawson.
Yeah,
Scott Dawson's got
they
a broken leg.
Him.
I think he's hurt.
Oh, okay.
I think he has a torn ACL.
I didn't know Dawson was too. But like a person like that who is very much an American. Very, like, you can tell just by looking at them, like, okay, that guy should be a radical American. Like, you're not going to bring in Corey Graves to stick him in there as part of the Real American. That would just throw it off the dynamic even more. So, out of the guys they have to call up, there's a lot of discrepancies.
could yet kind of have to go maybe even onto the roster they have right now and try to find somebody that put me here. But I hope that tag team with tons of funk going heel, maybe it doesn't, because it might feel like an over saturation of heel tag team. But getting back to the original match, Cody Rhodes and Bullet Club, there's no other team that's strong enough to beat them yet. I do see them losing at the Rumble. I see them losing the titles at the Rumble, and then them both entering the Rumble, and then maybe that's where the friction starts. But I see them retaining here, and then at the Rumble.
Okay, and that leaves us with the biggest match in WWE history, if you could believe that WWE with their hype on this match. No other match before this has been bigger, no matter what they tell you or what they've said in the past. This is the match to watch, folks. We have, obviously, if you don't know, John Cena, Randy Orton, world champion versus WWE champion. They're guaranteed one winner coming out of this Sunday, so we will see how that plays out. I was weary, like we said when it first started, I think we kind of all said that, you know, right when this match was announced, oh, well, it'll end with Cena grabbing the WWE title and Orton grabbing the world title and them just swapping belts. And then it kind of seemed like with the Triple H constantly saying they're guaranteeing one champion that they might have gotten onto that and maybe read different places saying everybody keeps saying this is going to happen, so we kind of have to try to get people to not think that. Obviously, it's probably still a possibility that it could happen, but I've changed my stance more in recent weeks where I think it's going to actually happen where one person walks out champion. Who that is, I think it's honestly, it could be depending on how they want to go. Like I said, going into WrestleMania season, you could see them going where they want Cena holding the title and defending it at WrestleMania, or you could say, well, maybe they want to have Cena in a big spectacle match, whether it be in a possible tag match with Hulk Hogan or a one-on-one match against The Undertaker. You know, there are those possibilities out there for Cena where the name Cena himself kind of makes it a big enough match where the WWE title doesn't have to be involved. And obviously, like I said, I threw up my situation with Orton and Roman Reigns before if they really want to push him, or you could go to Orton and Punk for the title, or Orton and Bryan for the title. And like Matt pointed out earlier, they added a little bit of kind of intrigue at the end there where you had Orton laying on the ground, looking up at Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, Kane, and John Cena, kind of with the whole, oh, there's a possibility maybe Cena will turn heel at TLC. That's not going to happen. I don't think it'll ever happen, no matter how much we want it to or how much we think it would be a good liven up for his character. I just don't see that happening at any point down the line, especially when Cena's their money guy, and despite Punk and Bryan both being over, I just don't see the WWE taking that big of a risk like they might have maybe, you know, during the Attitude Era or 6 or 7 years ago. I don't see that happening. As far as the match plays out, like I said, I think it's a 50-50 toss-up, but I think right now I'm going to go with Randy Orton winning here just because for the simple fact of I can see more possibilities down the line going forward into WrestleMania season with Randy Orton as WWE champion than I could with John Cena being champion. I mean, you could always do Cena Bryan again, or you could do Cena Punk again, but those matches have been done recently where I think Orton, if you want to go somewhere down the line of Punk, yeah, they fought 3 years ago at WrestleMania, but I think it's kind of far enough away in people's heads that it wouldn't be kind of like a stale matchup for them. So I think Orton's going to win here. I could very easily see a scenario where, you know, somebody like Triple H comes out and interferes in the match. I don't think anybody else would get involved. I don't see the Shield getting involved in this kind of, it's kind of almost not completely distanced themselves from the authority, but they haven't really been in too much contact with them recently. So I think Orton's going to win here. I think we'll probably get another rematch at the Royal Rumble because I don't think they would transition right away to a new feud for Orton. I think they'd want to have the rematch there, maybe with some kind of added stipulation to it. Who knows? But like I said, I just see more possibilities going forward with Randy Orton as WWE Undisputed Unified Champion, especially heading into WrestleMania time. Maybe if it wasn't WrestleMania, it would be a little different. But I think Orton's going to carry the WWE title into WrestleMania, and I think we're going to end up seeing Cena in some kind of spectacle match, whether it's The Undertaker or some kind of, you know, big tag match there. I think we'll see that. So I'm thinking Orton here and probably retaining with the help of somehow of Triple H or Kane from the Authority. Matt?
Yeah, Randy Orton. It's almost like too obvious which one of the John Cena, especially because he is the face of the company and always will be the face of the company. But Randy Orton is I will say newly single, nicely. He has commitments, but right now his first priority is wrestling. First priority is WWE. So, yeah, it's interesting in the idea that we're talking about a title unification match that could happen. It could not happen. Any other time that the title unification match has been brought up, there was never really that question of are we really uniting the championship. Last time was, well, we have the WCW title and we have the WWE title, and you pick one WWE title. Now we have the world title and WWE title, which are both held by WWE superstars, are both created by the WWE. But we still want to make one. I'm hoping that they don't make a new championship. And that's not just because I have a real liking for the current championship. It's okay, but it's been what. Or right after Royal Rumble, that they do it. That's kind of like kill off the siege of any WWE championship if they want to kill it off and start out with the belt. So I'm assuming whoever wins this walks away with the WWE championship rather than the big gold belt that has to be back at the end of the way. Randy Orton is a great press guy. He's a great talker. He's very candid when doing interviews and doing promotions and doing people of that nature. And now he could do them as a heel. He could do them as champion. And if he's promoting a match like maybe a rematch against John Cena at WrestleMania, that would be very easy for him. So I do see him winning the championship and being able to hold on to it. And I see him holding on to it like the best until WrestleMania. My whole call is being My whole thing is being CM Punk fit to win the Royal Rumble and moving on to WrestleMania against Randy or whoever the champion is. I didn't know it would be this undisputed type of role, but the one top main eventer right now that's never won Royal Rumble, unless you want to count Daniel Bryan. I don't think you can count him simply because of his tenure yet, but he's the one top guy who's never won Royal Rumble, and also what just fueled the fire for me a little bit was the fact that he was trying to hold back Randy Orton at the final brawl on Finish Raw and got into a fist fight. So they're going to bring that back as saying, well, you hit me first and I fought back and I'm not taking your step and you have something I want, something that I think I deserve, and here we go, we're off and running. It also added to the fact that Triple H jumped Punk right after he started to land into Orton. So there is a base right there for this matchup, It just needs to play out. Now, if they're going to go with the dream match of DX versus Punk and Bryan, I would think they would do Randy Orton and Punk at the Royal Rumble and get out of there, maybe at Elimination Chamber. We saw that as well, too. Elimination Chamber is going to be interesting because it's only going to be one now. I mean, there's no titles to go after if everything plays out right. So if there's only one Elimination Chamber and that one person gets a shot at the championship, we're no longer going to be able to see all these young guys who have proven themselves time and time again and finally get a shot in the match. They're going to be pushed aside, and the big main event players are going to be shoved right into the match. So you're going to see CM Punk, or unless he has a match, you're going to see Daniel Bryan, you're going to see maybe John Cena, you're going to see maybe Undertaker. You're going to see the guys, the big name guys in the Elimination Chamber match. And, I mean, there's a good article right now up on the WWE website about what would change if when the titles are unified. And they talked a lot about the Rumble and the fact that past Rumble winners choose which champion to go after. But honestly, I think the Elimination Chamber is biggest because in the end, it was always whoever won the Rumble would get one title shot, and then whoever won the Elimination Chamber would get a shot at the other championship. So now, which does the winner get? It's like there's no win for them unless they put the title on the line in the chamber, which could happen too. If they want to go with a different direction and they decide we need a new champion going into WrestleMania, they put the title on the line in the chamber and somebody either doesn't retain or retain. Maybe John Cena wins on Sunday and then loses it at Elimination Chamber. Who knows? But one way or another, it's going to make for an interesting few months. Thank God we've gotten back to interesting television. I think last week's Raw was, or the past week's Raw was really entertaining and really, I don't want to say thought-provoking, but intriguing in what we want to see what happens next. They've gotten back to that episodic television idea, and we really saw it in that episode, especially with the way that the final segment played out. So I'm interested. I'm interested in the pay-per-view. I'm interested to see if they do go with the screw job finish, how they pull off the screw job finish where they keep the champion. And if they go with one champion, I really am interested to see who they think is the best way to go for the first undisputed champion. I still think it's hysterical that they actually asked the fans to vote for the name of what the new champion was going to be, and they kind of just blew that off lately. But, yeah, we're going to get WWE Undisputed Champion. And who that is, I have no idea. I want to say it's Randy Orton, but there's so many scenarios. There's so many top guys right now because there have been two championships. There's a lot going on, and I'm hoping that a lot of these main eventers get pushed into tag teams and are able to reestablish tag teams, or these main eventers are pushed into IC title feuds and or U.S. title feuds, and or combine those two or whatever you want to do. But they've got a lot of talent in the upper mid card to main event level, and they won't have any place to put them pretty soon. So I'm curious to see what happens, and I'm hoping it's something fun. I'm hoping it's something interesting to talk about. And it'll probably take over some of our time on next week's show, even though we are doing a year-end show, a year-end sort of award show with a special guest.
Yeah, just real quick, a couple of points. I can totally see. I think, like you said, it's kind of a panic mode with them here. I think maybe if they would have planned this out a little bit further ahead and not done the total unification so quickly, maybe we wouldn't be seeing an Elimination Chamber pay-per-view at the in-between pay-per-view between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. I think it's one of those situations where we might see the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view and the Money in the Bank pay-per-view go away now that there's one unified champion, where maybe you see them bring Money in the Bank back to WrestleMania, because I don't know if they want to base the whole pay-per-view around just one ladder match instead of having two. And same thing, maybe now that they have one champion and they have all these main eventers to put off of, maybe you look at a time like in June or July where you can have, or even in the later months, where you can have the Elimination Chamber match and six guys fighting for the title. Like you said, it's one of those things where, especially with the ending this past Monday on Raw, they went from kind of holding my interest with TLC to all of a sudden just giving it, you know, full-blown, okay, I'm ready to see what happens here, and I'm ready to jump right into WrestleMania this season after it happens. So they did a great job selling things with that final segment, and I had to give them props, and I completely agree with you. I think I gave it a 7 or 8 Raw rating for Raw. It's one of the more enjoyable Raws I've seen recently. There was some good wrestling on it. There was good storytelling, obviously, with the end there. And they just did a good job piecing things together heading into TLC. But as far as our preview show goes, that is it. Like Matt said, next week we'll obviously talk about the ramifications of TLC for a little bit, what happened, where they could be going with the unified title from here on out. And then there's also, of course, like we said, our year-end award show. We'll be handing out our various awards, I'm sure, for Wrestler of the Year, Master of the Year, Diva of the Year, all that stuff. Another fun categories that we decide to make. And then give out. And unfortunately, we don't have a Slammy Award to hand to these superstars, so they're just going to have to go with the fact that they were good enough to be recognized by the HTC Wrestling Pulsecast crew and our special guest that will be out next week. So that is it for...
I just want to announce beforehand, I know we don't usually announce, but I'm sure he's going to be posting about it. I'm not sure, but I'm going to make a post about it. Our special guest will be Rob from WWE Creative, WWE Creative Twitter account. He's been on the show before, at least once or twice before. So he's excited to join us, especially for a year-end review. He's a guy who watches the product every single week and has to know what's going on. And he's already booked and settled in and ready to go for next week. So if you like what you read on Twitter, you'll be able to hear them live next week when we do the show at 8 o'clock.
All right, and there's your pitch for next week. As far as this Sunday goes, I will be live tweeting during TLC like I do with all pay-per-views and pretty much all Raws too, at JC Wonka. And I'm assuming, Matt, you'll once again be doing the at Pulse Wrestling Live Twitter feed and probably a random number 10 thoughts afterward as well.
Yeah, I'll be there watching everything.
Okay. All right. Well, as for my co-host Matt, I'm Justin Shawanku. We thank you for listening tonight. We hope you enjoy TLC this Sunday, and make sure to tune back in next Thursday night for our year-end review show and TLC review show. But until next Thursday, have a good night and enjoy TLC.